Well, it's fantastic to have you on here, Kelly and Wolf, on a Broadcom.net where we struggle for words. And it's so nice to have you struggle with me and everybody with us, hopefully. You have a big event planned for tomorrow, I understand.
I do. Dr. Robert Malone, who is leading the Declaration of Crimes on Humanity against the United States government. I will be interviewing him as along with Dr. Daniel Negassi, who I actually went to Dalhousie Medical School with here in Canada, in Nova Scotia. So I'm going to be interviewing both of these gentlemen. Dr. Negassi is an emergency doctor from Alberta, Canada, and he is going to be formally adding his name to this Declaration of Crimes Against Humanity and filing this declaration here in Canada against the Canadian government. And I don't want to give away too much, but there is a lot more to what is going to be taking place here, considering our Prime Minister, we now have evidence that he has invested in the creation of mRNA at the University of British Columbia. So, which is
in German, you would say, das schlägt ihm fast den Boden aus, which means that is really tipping the iceberg, you know, it's like toppling the
bottom. Some very interesting emails and messages from some very interesting people, of which at this time I don't care to share, but I will absolutely make public eventually when I know that the right safety precautions are put in place in order to do so.
What struck me when I read that press release was that you said he's leading this effort in this international lawsuit. Is it international lawsuit? Yes.
It started in Puerto Rico. It is definitely Robert Malone that that brought forth his declaration and brought thousands of doctors on board to sign it. And he presented this declaration at the World COVID International Summit and has since gotten the participation of tens of thousands of doctors worldwide, which is fantastic. And Canada is yet to come on board with this declaration, which I think is absolutely absurd.
Considering, is that the Barrington Declaration?
No, it's not the Barrington Declaration. I'll send you the links. This is a declaration for crimes against humanity against the United States government.
Right.
So, It's not the Barrington Declaration. The Barrington Declaration is just, you know, do no harm, whatever. This is specifically related to all of the actions that the United States government has taken in regards to COVID, from the restrictions to the lockdowns to the forced masks to the forced vaccinations to the vax passports.
And it's Robert Malone who is basically making the accusations and staking the
claim? No, there's tens of thousands of doctors that have signed this declaration.
Right.
So, and they within the declaration, it is clearly declared that these forced vaccinations are completely contradictory to medical science, and that they are actually meant to kill people.
And there is documented evidence, so that
yes,
you think
absolutely.
You're going to be able to convince a judge?
Yeah, well, we've got more than just that. So right now in Canada, we're putting together this amazing package of evidence to show criminal malfeasance on all scales from the government, to show the financial records of our premiers across Canada being paid by the International Monetary Fund and other pharmaceutical forces in order to force these vaccinations that are absolutely detrimental to the health of all Canadians onto our people. And this is basically murder for profit, Maren. On a mass global scale.
So one can hope for ample illustration, knowing that Dr. Robert Malone is, I think he holds the patent for the mRNA technology, and he was also leading fashion involved developing that technology at all. Is that right?
Yes, he was. He was one of the leading scientists in the invention of mRNA in the first place. Absolutely, he was. So you will see lots of fact checkers and politically funded sources that will try to discredit, defame, and degrade this doctor, as they do with every other doctor and scientist that speaks out against the pharmaceutical protocols and the political agenda that goes along with it. However, I think that at this point, after nearly 2 years of complete nonsense, economic destruction, family destruction, and a massive increase of suicide rates, and just an overall effect on the general mental health of people everywhere, that people are starting to see through the nonsense. And I'm
really
so grateful for that.
I want to add random dictation of who should be partake in the economy and who should not. And to me, this is a continuation of a direction that a government should never be involved in. To me, this is an extreme, you know, really, I guess, cancerous growth, you could call it, of this ongoing thing, you know, that the Canadian government likes to control who is in the market. They influence the market and they push the market in one direction and they make it really hard for small business. That is what really, I think, upset people like you and I the most, that small business was, the middle class was almost entirely solely, you know, absorbing that brunt and like for no scientific substantiation at all.
Well, it's not just that. Like, so it's time. Listen, our entire world is evolving on a conscious level and in a humane manner. And first in Canada, as an ambassador for an Indigenous nation and on a global scale. However, you know, these actions mean nothing unless we are pushing and striving for an overall greater solution. And I do believe 100% that it's going to be Canada that provides the rest of the world with an exemplary solution. And that is what we're going to be pushing on working towards. It is time to remove the British crown from this country. And I would suggest that it's time to remove them from every country.
Well, you see me smile because I'm really happy to see that we're talking about a greater context of these, you know, Umwälzung is a German word, which means like these turnovers, okay? Like it seems like the complete rupture of many of the societal systems that we've been taking for granted. Nonetheless, we shouldn't be afraid to take that on and come up with some new systems, which will be way better. We have all the technologies that we could ever want, you know? All we gotta start is, I think, share more, compete less, cooperate more, and control less. That seems to be the way to go.
Well, what we have to learn first. Okay, so first, it's all psychological. So, and as a clinical psychologist with training that is far exceeds university, especially when it comes to the psychosocial engineering standpoint, I have to say this. When it comes to evolution, you cannot evolve unless you have you are capable of adaptability. Now, you have to think about where you want to evolve to. And in order to decide where you're going to evolve to, you have to define what you value and what is most valuable in order to evolve. So, and it is my opinion, both professional and personal, that you cannot reach a standpoint of evolution without clearly defining and standing on the principles of individual liberty. And what does that mean? Okay. So that means that this society that we have created, where we label, categorize, and discriminate against anything that goes against the popular opinion, it needs to be completely eliminated. If you're going to evolve, you have to support individual liberty in every aspect, meaning that you're going to have to respect and support a difference of opinion, a different point of view, a different belief system, a different choice than your own. And if you can't clearly define the principles of individual liberty, then you don't stand a chance at evolution.
This is such a good place to insert. It's all a matter of perception, it seems. Because a lot of people think about Canada and have thought for a long time, oh yeah, Canada is that place where that tolerance is there. And now it seems like we have to come to the realization that no, we are actually not tolerant anymore, if we ever were.
Okay. Sorry about that. I keep getting interrupted. Everybody in the world literally is calling me tonight.
Well, we don't have to stretch it too long. It's nice to have a first session with you. I was wondering if we can do... I want to ask you one more personal, a more personal question, if you allow.
Sure.
Because you seem a very well-formed professional. You have degrees in many different areas, and you also trained in counterterrorism. I was interested to ask you, I mean, by now it's common knowledge, everybody knows it now, so yeah. But I was interested to find out in which of these formations have you all also worked in, and what was it that compelled you to get that certificate to do these studies to find out about this topic, and then what did compel you to either work or not work in that same area?
Okay, so it's pretty simple. My brother was fed up with me being a musician, and he is the one who put me in touch with some friends of his in order for me to get the training I required, because I was going to work as a forensic psychologist for CSIS. However, to date, I have never worked for a government agency anywhere in the world. So, and the reason being is that I found it to be a bit of a sellout to my own principles. For 21 years, I have been a civil rights activist on a global scale. And my principles are clearly defined of what it is that I value and what it is that I care about. And I'm not only a bit of a rebel and I don't take direction very easily from others, but I can't allow myself to become that sort of a hypocrite. So I didn't. And then lo and behold, look what happened. COVID hit. And everything that happened with COVID, you know, and the way that I got involved, you know, when nature speaks, you have to listen. And when I talk about nature, I'm not talking about the plants, the trees. I'm talking about the nature of all things.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had many experiences traveling the world, studying, you know, psychology, human behavior, social engineering, political science, and really experiencing different cultures, creeds, belief systems, mm-hmm. religions. I've had quite some experiences and run-ins, and it has opened what I believe to be a communication line with the nature of all things. And there is a shift happening to humanity. And hopefully in this lifetime, there will be millions of more people that will comprehend what it is that I'm talking about, but it might take a few more generations, but it's inevitable.
I told you, I always felt this was very construed just because somebody has training in a certain area. I feel at this point it's so obvious that our I want to say government, but it's I can't really even say that. These mafia organizations pose around our government really are just for-profit corporations, have made it so obvious that it's actually, it seems worthy to have a closer look how they actually facilitate this manipulation. Because in counterterrorism, I'm sure you understand a lot for what was very interesting for your own activism in the follow-up of that. I mean, obviously, right?
Yes, of course. You keep cutting out, Maren.
I'm sorry about that. I'm just saying, you know, like I never felt this was anything very worrisome. Even so, it's nice to know what your brother then does if he is working for the government. But that's a different topic.
My brother is first of all, he's not my brother biologically. So he is somebody who I deem my brother, and he has been more my brother than my
Right.
biological brothers my entire life.
Perfect.
Okay, so I'll make that very clear. First, I mean, that's first and foremost. Secondly, he is an active duty JTF2 soldier, and Joint Task Force 2 is the highest grade of soldier in Canada.
Excellent.
And these are the men and women, well, mostly men in this case. And that's not a discriminatory thing. It's because there's a specific skill set that women cannot achieve that these men can. And these are the men that train the Navy SEALs in the States.
Wow.
Yeah. So he is also an active officer for the Canadian Security Intelligence Services, so CSIS, but his focus is on international war crimes. And what people fail to understand is that in the way that these institutions are built, is that one department is not privy to the information in another. So to try, you know, and this is another problem and an indoctrination of our society. This one sized fits all, you know, scenario that they try to label and pin on every single on everyone,
I
you
would
know,
agree.
it's not only absurd, it's stupid. It's stupid and it's dangerous. I mean, look at COVID, for instance. You're trying to apply a one sized fits all situ you know solution to billions of individuals with individual bodies and health requirements. So not only is that absurd, it's stupid. It is
It mocks
stupid.
science. It makes it gives science a really bad name.
Well, it's like saying it's okay to go to a dentist for an open heart surgery.
Exactly,
You have
yeah.
be out of your mind. That is madness. It is absolute madness.
If you
And
allow
here's the
me,
problem.
I'm
Yeah.
sorry, go ahead.
I said, well, the problem with that is that most people, most intelligent people, anyone with an IQ above 100, okay, even above 90, know that it's absolute nonsense and have known in the first place. Yet they choose to disrespect themselves. And the moment that you infringe upon the self-respect of an individual, you have already enslaved them.
That is
So.
so true. That is so true. If you allow me, I just want to go back to these court proceedings. It sounded
Sure.
like it is it's a very similar effort that is brought forward by the Esmin Tribunal, the Anishinaabeg Tsleil-Waututh'en Indigenous Métis Nation, is it?
Métis Indigenous Nation, yes.
Métis
This is
Indigenous
Asmin.
Nation. Getting better at
Yes,
it.
I am the ambassador. I am an internationally recognized sovereign ambassador for Anishinaabeg Tsleil-Waututh'en Métis Indigenous Nation. And what our nation is doing is they are providing a path of relief to all Canadians by adopting Canadians into the nation and providing them with a new nationality so that they can free themselves from the jurisdiction, the rule, and the involuntary voluntary consent of being governed by a corporate fiction, of which is the corporation of the federal government of Canada. So, but along with this path, we are also working on building a constitutional republic where the people will have the universal, supreme, and explicit authority over their life, liberty, security, and property across this entire land.
Now tell me, is that the same effort that Dr. Robert Malone is spearheading?
No, Dr. Robert Malone is fully and wholly focused on holding all of these corporations, including the corporations of the federal governments of different states and nations, criminally responsible for their actions because they are genociding people on a global scale.
I just heard Bok say the same thing, didn't he? Like, he was specifically also going for the United States to get them to, I think it's effort to become more familiarized with this trespassing and the obligation to adopt since UNDRIP of June 2021. A judiciary that resembles the indigenous judiciary, right?
Well, what my loving and cherished Attorney General Glenn Bogue is trying to say is that first of all, we as a nation of unsurrendered tribes, bands, clans, and sovereign people, we do not have to comply to UNDRIP. So in all of his files, in all of his paperwork, and because of the contract under UNDRIP that was signed at United Nations and at the Hague in International Court, the corporation of the federal government of Canada has already contracted to oblige by the rules within the Treaty of UNDRIP, okay, which we are utilizing as a tool to force our sovereign rights on our natural resources, our land, and our God-given birthrights. So, and in doing so, we have already officially filed an international court to have the crown removed from the land.
So that's like three different legal efforts happening right
yes.
there.
Yes. Well, much more than that, Maren. We've got, I believe right now in Canada, actively, there's approximately 16,000 different cases, you know, all in different fields and different jurisdictions of law, where we're fighting them. This is an actual war. And this war is being done in a court of law, both within a de facto system and in international court. So, but it is a joint effort. And what needs to happen is a coordinated effort needs to come forth. And because everybody's kind of scattered everywhere, you've got all these different freedom fighting organizations and nonprofits and grassroots groups and civil groups that are doing their own actions. And so I've created an association. And what my work is right now is we're bringing everybody together under the association, which is called the Canadian Democratic Defense Association, so that they can utilize the resources they each have in their own arsenal, in their own supply, to provide each other with the actions or the resources that they need to bring their actions to fruition.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what needs to happen. We are not fighting a domestic beast here. Canada is the richest country on earth in natural resources. We have just in the last month and a half, the people that I've met through Indigenous nations, who have access to untapped resources, is insane. So what I have been doing right now is I am linking them up with the right investors that have no affiliations to the Crown or the Crown corporations, but do have the financial means to tap into these untapped resources, create billions of dollars in revenue, and create millions of jobs for Canadians, tribes, bands, clans, Indigenous people all alike. So, and this is going to cause an uproar of economic independence in this country like no one's ever seen. And I'm very, very blessed to, I'm tired, but I'm very, very blessed to be a part of all this.
Well, that is certainly very exciting to hear. I've always felt that the place was grossly mismanaged in the 20 years that I've lived in Canada. I felt the resources were not at all exploited in a way that the residents of that country would benefit from them at all, unless they were privately invested in those undertakings, you know.
Yeah.
It would be a nice change.
Yeah. Well, we need a lot of changes. I mean, first of all, it's very difficult because we have three generations of an indoctrination that has taken place.
Mm-hmm.
And because the tool to indoctrinate that was used was a form of psycholinguistic manipulation, we are now finding ourselves in a very difficult spot where we have to quite literally re-educate the entire population as quick as possible, so that they can comprehend simple definitions and terms, because the tool that was used to indoctrinate them was a form of psycholinguistic manipulation. Now, psycholinguistic manipulation is where you would use terminology and words to promote an emotional response to achieve a premeditated outcome from a mass group of people. For instance, when you hear Justin Trudeau talk about we need to fund our foreign fighters, you would automatically assume, as a, you know, patriotic Canadian, that he would be talking about a faction of the Canadian military, when in fact, when you look a little closer, he's talking about ISIS.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you see the emotional response that you have in the difference of those two things? If he's talking about a faction in the Canadian military, of course you're going to show your support. You will donate your very last dime to help our vets and our soldiers because they pledge their lives for yours. But if I tell you he's talking about ISIS, which indeed he was, you immediately know that he's talking about a group of radical people who have one goal and one goal only, and that is supremacy over all others, and they will kill to get it. And they don't care if you are a man, woman, child, or grandparent. And they will do it in the most brutal, blunt, and direct way. And so here's the prime minister of a country that is supposed to be, you know, respected around the world for our humanitarianism, for our peace, for our tolerance. And here's the prime minister promoting death, destruction, war, and murder.
That is a detail about the Canadian government that escapes as well a lot of Canadians, I think, how a prime minister can seem to be so respected and well known for all these virtues on the exterior, on the international level, whereas they behave like the worst tyrants at home. Now,
well, I'll say that
with regards to policing, I just felt like I wanted to ask you, since you became sovereign officially and the tribe is in the process of adopting you, or you are already adopted in the tribe, and in fact, you were born in North America, so there really shouldn't be any adoption necessary, because according to what the essence of their claim is, I believe you are already indigenous, because you didn't immigrate here, because you were born here. Now, that is, of course, sensational offer to all Canadians to unite under this flag and just kind of walk out of that corporation posing for a government. The problem being that many Canadians don't realize that it's just a theater, that it's just an indoctrination that they have accustomed to understand as their reality, but it's not reality.
Okay, so let me break this down for you this way. So indigenous is a legal term. Okay, it was a label put upon different tribal people in order to categorize them into and give them a one-size-fits-all name. Okay. Now, there are many people that don't mind being called indigenous, but the truth is this: I do mind being called indigenous. I am not indigenous. I am a Cree, an Ojib Cree tribal sovereign woman by birth. My mother was Ojib Cree. She was mixed Ojib Cree and German.
Okay, so then you don't really have to worry about all of this Assman proceeding.
No, I actually don't, but I do. And the reason, so let me tell you how Assman came to adopt me in the first place. So there are different jurisdictions, and the Crown Corporation does not have any jurisdiction over any indigenous nation. Okay, their corporate laws do not, and civil laws do not apply to sovereign people, let alone sovereign people who have never surrendered to being conquered or ruled or governed by a fictitious government. So I have currently to date been put in handcuffs since January 2021, 49 times. Wow. I have received 58 summons and tickets across this country for protesting on behalf of our children, our elderly, and each other. I have been brutalized by police a total of 5 times, including having my lower right ribs cracked. I'm currently bruised head to toe from the hospitality, and I say that with much sarcasm, of the sheriffs from the Edmonton, Alberta legislature. I have been imprisoned without any due process, no phone calls to lawyers, and no phone calls to family, friends, or likewise. I've been kept in isolation for over 29 hours on my menstrual cycle with no food nor water, to the point where I had to cut my pants off when I was finally released. So I've been held as a political prisoner, put directly into isolation in a full maximum security prison for women, without my children having any access to me or even knowing what happened to me.
It's ridiculous. Let me make a point in saying right now, I'm really so sorry that all these things happened to you, and it's totally wrong.
I am not a victim. Do not be sorry. Do not be sorry. I will never be a victim.
I'm an empath, so I feel you. Maybe that's more what I wanted to say.
Okay. Well, but I'll tell you this right now. If you feel me, then you should be perked up with your head up, because I am not a victim.
I will never be anyone. Also, my microphone is right here.
Yeah. Well, I've said it 1,000 times and I'll say it again. If I have to exchange my heart for the safety of 1 billion others, then you're worth it.
You are just a beautiful person, and thank you so much for all of your effort. Do you feel that the information and illustrations coming from Asman are making it easier for you to deal with enforcement, even so they are being sent out to brutalize you?
Absolutely. It absolutely is. And that is why I only have 4 criminal charges and 16 breaches, because once I was adopted by the nation and this corporate fictitious jurisdiction no longer has any effect on me. So because those first 4 criminal charges of common nuisance were given to me prior to my new nationality, and my revocation of consent to be governed by a corporate fiction, they can only charge me with breaches to my previous crimes under their fictitious laws. And that is why I have 4 criminal charges and 16 breaches.
Right.
And since then, I have been made ambassador to the nation, and I am internationally recognized as an ambassador to an indigenous nation. And that is why now they don't even give me paperwork. They just release me. However, the sheriffs in Alberta for the Queen's Bench, they did unlawfully detain me, which is kidnapping and forcible confinement under international law. And what they did to me was no different than arresting and detaining the Queen herself. So I am going to be holding every single one of those so-called police officers that are supposed to live in respect of laws to full accountability. And like the other ones, I will strip their badges and they will no longer be officers. I believe 100% in the institution of law enforcement, but I do not believe that any individual should ever be provided the authority or like any sort of public authority if they don't have the moral integrity as an individual, you know, to use their own discretion.
Trauma and judgment are very difficult to shake, and we should be very concerned to have only very healthy people and mentally healthy people in our enforcement, because it's a really tough job. And I agree with you 100%. If you aspire to a fair democracy, from which we are a far cry and have been for a long time, then you must be ready to enforce those laws, you know. Well, I would like to talk more about economic aspects of a potential change, but if you want to leave it at this 50
well, let me just can I just can
one
I just
minutes that
something?
We've been into that would be fine too, but if you have some last words, that's great too. And I just hope I'm going to get another session with you sometimes.
Yeah, of course you will. Of course you will. But I'd like to say this in regard to democracy. First and foremost, I would argue that democracy should not be used as a philosophy, as a political philosophy.
No.
It doesn't support individual liberties, as 51% of a population under a democratic political structure can make the decisions for 49%. And that is where our conflict comes in, because we are evolving as individuals and both psychologically and consciously and physically. So in order to support a society that truly respects the principles of individual liberty, I would argue that democracy should be used as a tool. And every tool should come with a set of rules. And that set of rules would come in the form of a constitution. And that constitution should be voted upon in a democratic way. And that is going to be the road to get there. And then you can spend the next 25 generations arguing out the amendments all you like. But until we live in a society that stands on the principles of individual liberties, we are not going to find our freedom.
I've been thinking about that myself a lot. I receive press releases regularly from fairvote.ca. I like this organization very much because they compare the seats, the number of seats, according to either first past the post or proportional representation, which seems to be much more in favor of small parties who can also then become part of a coalition and actually have government executive instead of just spending decades in the opposition, never really deciding on anything. I'm sure like a good opposition, of course, will be reflected in the lawmaking, I would argue. Yet it's a more immediate process, it seems, and that it translates more exactly the seats from the actual popular vote. So would you aspire to something like a more proportional representation resembling system? Or, for example, what I find an interesting thought is that maybe people who are not concerned with the decision, they won't be voting on it. Like, for example, why would men vote on women's healthcare? Why not let women vote on women's healthcare? That would also make for less administration organizing those elections because fewer people had to vote on the issue. But let me hear your thoughts. I want to find out what your thoughts are.
Because I believe that some of those questions are a little bit segregated, although I do.
Your audio just came back on.
Okay, so rather than answering those specific questions, because I do believe that those questions themselves, as much as I love and respect your opinion so much, are a little bit segregated. Let me just paint you a structure. So in an evolved society that would support individual liberties, you would have a one-bodied government. Okay, that one-bodied government would be populated by independently elected representatives of the people. The only opposition to that one-bodied government should be the people. And the people should have the authority, regardless of the situation or issue, to remove one member or the entire enchilada of that body by the democratic tool of majority consensus vote at any time for any reason. Now, here's the thing. If you have a one-bodied government with independently elected officials, you are going to completely eliminate lobbying. There goes half your problem. You are going to have individuals that are representing their communities, their municipalities, their people. Okay. And these individuals all come with their own individual opinions, and it'll be up to them to gain the insight and make the decisions for the people within that they represent within their ridings. And if the people in that riding are opposed, then they, by majority consensus vote, can remove that member and elect a new one. This is the sort of structure that will promote individual liberties, that will stand in defense and clearly define the principles of a constitutional republic. And the only opposition should be the people.
So that really would put the representative in the duty to carry out directly the popular opinion in their riding.
Yes.
And if they don't, they might not return to their seat, right?
That is correct.
And that way people don't just say yes or no every 4 years or every 5 years or every 3 years, quite often actually in Canada. But they have... It's not this. What really annoys me about that so far is that you trot down to your election locale and you make your check mark and that's it. You don't really know much about anybody who's trying to win the vote. It's really rare. I was fortunate enough here where I just moved to the countryside north of Gatineau. To have a municipal election here, and people actually came to my house to introduce themselves, which I found that's fantastic. Like, I wasn't expecting that, but that's really how it should be. Everybody should know the representative, and nobody should be afraid to tell them, "I didn't like the way you voted on this procedure the last time I saw you vote on it, because I thought we decided something else here at home in the riding." That's great.
You know, every, so here's the thing, our current political structure They talk about democracy, this, democracy, that, okay? And truly, there's nothing democratic about the structure. I mean, you have these political parties who compete with one another, who swear an oath to the crown and not the people, who work upon their own individual partisan constitutions and do not represent the constitution that they claim represents the people in the first place. Mm-hmm. So public service doesn't actually serve the public. They serve their parties. So everybody needs to stop participating in a system that just simply doesn't serve them and start building one that does. And that would be my final thoughts on that. It is actually that simple. Everything is simple. People complicate things for their own personal agendas and self-interest.
I just read this on social media today. If it's complicated, it comes from ego. Spirit is simple.
And that is my spirit name. It is Da'anis Katori, and it means daughter of the spirit.
Well, that is wonderful, daughter of the spirit. I'm not sure if I can pronounce it in the original
Da'anis
way.
Da'anis Katori.
Da'anis Katori.
Katori. Yes.
Okay. Well, that was a wonderful first session. Thank you so very much for making time in your busy schedule, Kellyanne Wolf. I cannot wait go and see. At the time I'm going to be publishing this clip, it's going to be a rerun, I understand. Where can people see the session that you got coming up tomorrow? Actually, is a big interview with Robert Malone and so many others that people should never not see. If you can't tune in live, I'm sure you're going to host it. Where is it going to be?
Yep, we're going to be hosting it on Freedom Forum Canada, the group page, freedomforumcanada.com, noblesavages.me. It'll be on Facebook, on multiple groups and multiple platforms. I do believe that InfoWars Canada will be sharing it out as well. It'll be on my Instagrams, which you guys can reach out to me at Official Kelly Wolf or Real Kelly Ann Wolf. On Instagram, it'll also be on all of my Facebook pages, so Da'anis Katori and Kelly Wolf, the page. Also, I have another page called She Wolf, and it will also be broadcast on there as well. It will also be shared out internationally from the World Doctors Alliance. I believe Stu Peters might be posting it as well, and it's going to be everywhere, guys. So as soon as you log on to Facebook and you type in Dr. Robert Malone Live, it'll come up everywhere.
Thank you so very much. I hope it goes really cool. I can't wait to see it. I'm probably going to tune in tomorrow. And I catch you the next time. Please be safe and walk tall.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Maren, for having me. Love you very much.
I love you too, dear. Take care now.
Okay. Bye.
Thank you so very much for tuning into my channel. I'm also on YouTube and Twitch. Please like and share this video, subscribe to my channel, and you can also donate to my operation of 12 years independent reporting at abroadcom.net. Thank you all so very much for your support. I very much appreciate it, and I sure can use all the help I can get.